Welcome in to another new NACE International podcast. My name is Ben Dubose, staff writer with Codings Pro Magazine, also Materials Performance Magazine. Today, as we continue our Codings Pro interview series, looking at tips to help the bottom line of our industrial and commercial coatings contractors, one thing that we like to do is speak with various experts in the field to get a sense for what's going on in the market in 2020. And one of those guys is my friend Justin Tuzinga. He is the president of Black Bear Coatings and Concrete based in Massachusetts. Justin, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And for anyone who is not aware, we've profiled Justin and the team at Black Bear, their work in a few projects. Most recently, the July 2020 issue of Codings Pro, we wrote about a project that they've completed in the last couple of years working on a new medical marijuana facility up in Massachusetts. It's a very interesting story. We will be talking about that some on today's podcast, trying to get some tips to potentially help our other coatings contractors that are hopefully listening. But before we get to specifics of that job, I want to start you with a question that I'm guessing is on everyone's mind. How is business different for you all at Black Bear in 2020? There's obviously a new normal when it comes to dealing with work in a pandemic. How have you and your crews adjusted? And basically, what's different in 2020 compared to 2019 or 2018 for you guys?
Do you mean besides the obvious COVID?
Yeah, I mean, what's different in terms of how your crews have adapted to the various ways that you have to conduct business now?
Yeah, it's actually a great question. You know, my partner and I, John, we were talking about this a few weeks back, you know, and we've been very fortunate and blessed in 2020. You know, a lot of people are struggling, and we at Black Bear seem to be thriving. One of the things that's been very different for us is, you know, I say we're fortunate now, it was scary at the time, but before everything got shut down and when COVID was new, we had one of our employees had a person, you know, someone's mother's grandmother's doctor test positive for COVID.
Okay.
And like many other, you know, of our fellow contractors, you know, we load up guys in vehicles and go to job sites.
Right.
And, you know, our employee got the call about 6:30 in the morning saying that the person removed from them got tested and they were positive. We let us know. And we ended up having to send five guys back. That was, I think, on March 8th.
Okay.
And we made a decision corporately from that point on, we switched to single occupancy vehicles. And what that did is it really got us thinking about, you know, the current environment, like how we were going to adjust to COVID, what we'd have to do, because, you know, the governments were talking about shutting down for 15 days, right? Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, now we're what, 170 days later? And a lot of the clients we service, we knew that they would be nervous about it as well. So we wanted to get ahead of it, and we kind of met as a leadership team at the company and thought about things that we could do to hedge our bets with COVID. You know, and the underlying sentiment of Black Bear is we always want to be authentically helpful. We want to be authentically helpful to our employees. We want to be authentically helpful to our clients, to our suppliers, all the way around, right? You know, we have a belief system underlying that if we help, it comes back in the end. So with that in mind, you know, what we started to do is with the single occupancy vehicles and, you know, more people than normal having to take their own vehicles to work, we started paying our employees when they left their house. So typically they'd come to the shop, they'd start getting paid, you know, when they got to the shop and round trip to the shop. If they took their own vehicle, they would get paid when they got on the site, when they left. Now we changed our policy where we pay them when they leave their house, whether they come to the shop or not. They still get paid round trip when they come back to the shop, but if they go home, they only get paid one way. And we did that as a way to offset, you know, the time, the consideration of taking their own vehicles and things like that, because we realized, like, we're all in this together, right? If the ship goes down, we're all going down.
Right.
So what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen? And what can we do to ensure the best interests of our Black Bear employees and also our clients?
So is there anything new with regards to the precautions that you all take at the job site? Or is it a situation where, I'm guessing one thing that's sort of beneficial for coatings contractors, in terms of PPE, this is a business where a lot of that is already baked in. you should have been already doing a
Correct.
lot of the things that you're seeing out in broader society in 2020. So in terms of the job site itself, day to day, when you're on a project, is that really that different in 2020 compared to the last couple of years?
So I think that's a great question. I think you're right. We do wear the PPE on sites anyway, while grinding and things like mm-hmm. that. I think what's really different is you have to teach people to keep their head on a swivel. And it's constant reminders. And it's not just constant reminders from the top down. You know, as a company, we all police each other. So, you know, if you see someone doing something that's unsafe, if they're interacting with someone that they don't normally see and they're not 6 feet and they're not wearing a mask, mm-hmm. you know, we all kind of give ourselves a little shrug like, hey, guys, put your mask on.
Yeah.
So I think the big difference is being aware of your surroundings. And it really depends on the size of the job site, right, Ben? Like some of these jobs mm-hmm. were on for a week. Some of them were on for a year and we're back and forth. And the larger the job site, the more we encourage everyone to keep their head on a swivel. We've actually even gone as far, and I recommend it to everyone, to empower our foremen and our leads and anyone who sees something unsafe to say something and do something. Not just with Black Bear employees, but with others too.
Sure.
I'll give you a tangible example. We're on a job site. It's like a 10,000-foot room on this project we've been on for probably off and on for a year between polishing and between the different forms of coatings that we're installing. And we're in this 10,000-foot room wide open, and all our guys are socially distanced, and we're doing our work, and we have electricians who have to come in and do some stuff before we start applying. Mm-hmm. Well, the electricians aren't wearing any of their masks, right?
Yep.
And my foreman says, you guys need to put a mask on. You know, and typical electricians and plumbers, I'm not putting my mask on.
Right.
And I said to my foreman, I said, you go tell the lead, the superintendent on the job. I said, you tell him that he needs to have these people put their mask on because we're not going to jeopardize all our hard work that we've done since this started mm-hmm. and run the risk of getting infected. We don't see these people every day. And if they don't do it, we're going to leave. And if you have a problem with it, you can call my boss. And needless to say, the electricians put their mask on pretty quick. But again, that's the thing, right? Like, we're all in this together. Like, common sense prevails. Like, none of us want to wear masks, right? But to a certain degree, if you're in your hot spots, you have to.
Right.
It's just a responsible thing to do. And at the end of the day, whether you agree with it or not, you know, our clients pay our bills. And if they want us wearing masks, we're going to wear masks. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. It's about the bottom line. And I think that's something that everyone can agree with beyond, you know, certainly we should all be in it together from a health perspective. But in terms of business, it's just common sense business practice as well, because clients want it. And it's what's in the best interest of completing a project. So I think it works on all
that's
sorts
exactly
of levels.
Right.
So let's transition
that's
to
exactly right.
the recent case study that we did on you guys, the medical marijuana facility. And I think a good way to start, and one reason why, beyond the fact that it was in the July 2020 issue, one reason why I wanted to talk about this was because medical marijuana, that's a relatively new industry, or at least in terms of the growing scope of it in recent years. So I think a good place to start, tell our listeners how you all got involved with this project, because I'm sure there's going to be other businesses in the coming years and decades that are relatively new and grow in scope. So how did you at Black Bear sort of insert yourselves to where you were in position to land this job? And what's, I don't know if it's fair to say it's a new industry, but it's certainly a new industry in terms of the rapid pace that it's growing at now. So how did you position yourselves at Black Bear to land this gig?
So, you know, the funny part is not a new industry, but in Massachusetts right now, we jokingly call it the green rush, right?
Yeah.
Like, because there's so many facilities that are either permitted or going to be getting ready to open once the red tape clears up a little bit to start growing marijuana. So this particular project, we always pride ourselves on doing high quality work. Like, I'm sure everyone in our businesses do, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have high standards, not only on the quality of our work, but also on our operation, meaning how we coordinate jobs, how we communicate with the client, how we phase the project and work with them to really develop a project plan. I'm sure most of the people listening can relate that, you know, the GC tells us the job's going to be ready on a Monday, and we mm-hmm. show up on a Monday, and it's not ready at all. So we work really hard to partner with our clients, whether it's a GC or the owner direct, to really go over and above of managing their schedule to make sure that we can execute our work at the highest level possible, as efficiently as possible, while providing the best product possible, right?
Yeah.
So with that said, we got into this because we have a reputation for that in our local market.
Okay.
And we had done a couple of small other cultivation sites in the Massachusetts area. And, you know, their industry, just like ours, is a niche. So word gets around. We were introduced, you know, to the client. The manufacturer was separately reached out to, and it kind of all came together where we were able to do that work. That's how we got into it. And we worked really hard. You know, everyone has budgets, right? Like everyone doesn't want to spend a ton of money if they don't have to, and all those things come into play. So we're always cognizant of the fact that we can't spend people's money, but we want to give them the best advice possible, almost like a doctor, right? Like,
yeah,
we joke around when, you know, some competitors will go against our painting companies, you know, nothing wrong with it, but we laugh because we tease, like, you know, if you're getting heart surgery, do you want your general surgeon doing it? Your general physician doing the surgery? Do you want a heart surgeon? Right.
Right.
And so that's kind of how we present it. Like, these are your options. These are what the costs are. This is what you can do. And I think that's really ultimately what led us to winning that project and doing that phase and multiple other phases for them.
And to clarify for our listeners, it's certainly not a new industry. I say new industry from the perspective of coatings contractors, because the rapid pace at which it's growing now means that there's a lot more opportunities. So other contractors around the various states where this is growing may have an opportunity that they didn't have in the early stages of medical marijuana, where it wasn't nearly at, again, the scope that it is now. So I think it's one of those things. Maybe I shouldn't say new industry. It's a new business opportunity. I think that's a good way of summing up the way it is for coatings contractors in 2020. And one thing that really intrigued me about this, Justin, when I interviewed you for this story a few months ago, I had not written about a job at a medical marijuana facility before. And one of the first questions I had for you was, what's different about it compared to, say, a standard food and beverage job? And one of the more intriguing things that you told me was that it's really not that different in terms of the way that you approach it from a contractor perspective. So for anyone who has not done this type of work before, how different, or I guess in this case, not different, is it compared to a standard F&B job?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a great question. I think, and this would be a tip to any contractor who's doing these. There's a propensity. You know, everyone needs work, so I would never tell anyone what system to install. But the one thing we have to keep in mind is that marijuana specifically is not a traditional pharmaceutical product, right? Mm. But it's becoming more and more widespread. And with that, the governance on that is going to become more and more strict. So while they may not be overseen by the FDA right now or the USDA, depending on whether they're doing edibles and consumables or if they're just doing cultivation, at some point, if it becomes federally legal, those agencies are going to come in. And so one of the things that we've seen in our space is that, you know, these cultivation sites weren't always the best funded businesses at the time. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they didn't necessarily have budgets to spend $7, $8, $9, $10 a square foot on floors. They were expecting to spend $1 on a square foot on floors. Well, what they're finding in the industry now is that it's just like a food and beverage plant. If a food and beverage plant is not, let's say they make muffins. If a food and beverage plant is not making muffins, are they making money? No. So it's not about the cost. It's about how much revenue they're losing. Mm-hmm. And there's no difference with these marijuana cultivation facilities, because if you're not growing plants, you know, no pun intended, but you're not growing money, right? So now we have facilities we're going in and doing repairs in where we tell them they have to shut the room down and pull everything out. They're like, what do you mean? Well, what I mean is that we're going to be grinding the floor. We're going to be installing coatings, even though they're zero VOC. We don't want anything to affect the plants, right? The same way if we were in a traditional pharmaceutical plant, we don't want anything to infect the drugs that are going to be inserted into the patients. It's the same thing, right? It's a consumable. So I think that's one of the biggest things that, you know, you're starting to see in Massachusetts. I can't speak to California or Colorado or other states like Washington where this stuff is super prevalent, but in Massachusetts, I think they're starting to get more intelligent and looking ahead about, like, look, you know, we may save a few bucks a square foot now, but what is it going to cost us when we're up and running? We have to shut this room down because our floors are peeling, right?
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Yep. I think another noteworthy part of this project, at least towards the beginning of it, and we're talking about Commonwealth Alternative Care, you guys are basically helping retrofit what was a warehouse space into this new cultivation site. And because it was basically retrofitting the whole building, there's a lot of other trades that you had to work with. For example, earlier, talking about business in 2020, you mentioned electricians, you mentioned plumbers. There's all sorts of other trades that are at the site.
I think the biggest thing that helped us is a general knowledge of how the other contractors work and execute, and really requiring a high level of communication among them. So, when we come into the space, what trades happen? Like, even though our floors are industrial, they're a finished floor. No client wants to get a floor that they just paid, easy math, say, make it easy, $10 a foot for and have it scratched, right? So we always would communicate that with the GC and the client and, try and minimize the impact of our work on the entire site. Because ultimately, when we're in a space, we don't want anyone in there after us. We don't want to worry about contamination. We don't want to worry about things that are going to affect the bonding of the floor system that we're installing. So it's super important that, we're smart about it. So like a tangible would be hallways, right? You have access to these rooms that other trades are working in. But if you shut down the hallway, how are they going to access it? So we had to get creative with points of access from other sides. So if we were working on rooms, let's say we were doing four flower rooms, we would get ahead and edge grind the hallways and install cove base so that when it did come time to shut down the hallway, we would minimize impact. So instead of starting that work on a Monday, we may start it on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, for example, to make it go forward. And really communicating turnaround times. Like that's one of the reasons when we talk to clients, they want to get to growing as quickly as possible. Well, if we use, let's say, an aliphatic urethane, depending on the ambient temperatures, it could be 24 to 48 hours before you can get back on it with a lift. And that's one of the reasons we elected to go like a polyaspartic, because we could finish on a Friday or a Saturday and we wouldn't be concerned on a Monday with other trades getting back on the floor, right? So those are the kind of considerations we think about when we're at the beginning, when we're value engineering it, but also during the project, when we know that, the control sub needs to, the electric control subs, right, for all the systems, the electrician, the sprinkler guy, right, the wall panel guy who has to do his final details, those types of things.
Another part of this project that was interesting to me, you mentioned the polyaspartic. This was a pretty complex system. Well, first you had to shot blast, grinding, you were going for the CSP3 profile, and then the system itself. We're talking about a cementitious urethane flooring system, custom cove, the polyaspartic top coat. There's a lot of stages to this job, and yet your crew is relatively small. I think you said on average 4 to 6 crew members, right? Yeah, so it's a relatively small crew, and one thing that stood out to me, to complete all of these different stages, the surface prep, the application, these guys have got to be fairly versatile. So I know you all at Black Bear
Correct.
place a high degree of importance on training and versatility. Talk about how that helped you in this job, as well as I'm sure others since then, the versatility and the well-trained nature of your crew.
Yeah, no, that's a great question and a loaded question. So that's one of the things we're still working on figuring out. We don't have the final answer yet, but we're working towards it. For example, like we'll do a 3-day training of new employees before we even let our guys touch a grinder, before we even let them get in the field. We want to make sure they have their OSHA, their DOT, all those things, we sink cost into before they even start actually being able to produce revenue. The second part of it is we want to give our leaders as much leverage in the field as possible. So we always try to identify, what are the things on a project that are the bottlenecks? Prep, patching, cove. So we want to get people up to speed as quickly as possible with those things, while at the same time recognizing that our direct leads and PMs need to manage quality. So, we have training, I don't know if you call it like benchmarks, like we try and do different levels, like level one, level two, level three, level four, project lead, project foreman. And we identify hard skills and soft skills that we want to train people to, because people learn differently, people have different aptitudes, and then we adjust accordingly. we also flex guys in. So, you know, 4 to 6 guys may get us to the point where we're ready to pour urethane cement, but then we'll have a crew of 10 on there if we're going to pour 10,000 square feet in a day, right?
Yeah.
Because we want to make sure it goes off without a hitch.
Yeah.
So I think really the other part is communication. Everyone needs to be speaking the same language. Everyone needs to understand the same processes. Mm-hmm. Like, there's different ways to do things, and that's okay, as long as the end result is the same.
Yeah.
And that's the important piece, you know? So you may travel differently than I do with the cove, which we don't really care, as long as the cove is appropriate and looks, it's smooth, it's, you know, stoned or sanded, the edge detail looks tight, that's fine.
One part of it that stood out to me on this job, you had the full Duraflex system. How much of this equation for you guys depends on having a relationship with the coating manufacturer? Because I know that in terms of the expertise of how you lay out and apply these coatings, you mentioned the cove was trial applied. I believe the system itself was squeegeed on this job, right?
Correct. Apply,
yeah.
You know, we squeegee it out with like a gauge rake, and then when the coating goes on, the notch squeegee and roll out the top coat. Yep.
That's what I thought. How important is the relationship, or I guess the background knowledge of the manufacturer, so that you all have going in a good understanding of the technical properties of the coatings themselves?
I don't think it's as much as a technical property of the coatings as in the flooring systems, like the urethanes,
mm-hmm.
as it is about the familiarity with the material.
Okay.
As well as the workability with the material, you know, like many of your listeners, we use many different manufacturers.
Okay.
And we do that because, you know, we want to offer solutions to our clients, and not one single manufacturer doesn't
right.
have all of the solutions. So we want to have that in our bag of tricks. Duraflex, we have a great relationship with. Their urethane cement polycrete is one of the best in the market from a workability standpoint, predictability standpoint, knowing what to expect when you put it down. So that's important. It's also important, the relationship, when you run into stuff you don't expect, right?
Sure.
Like, you know, on that particular project, there was this one room we shot blasted, right? Hang the cove, come back the next day, floor is black.
Yep.
Right? So it was an old kind of warehouse. They had machine and equipment in there. So oil was being brought to the surface. We're like, okay, go in, shot blast, grind it again. We let it sit for a little while. 5 hours later, the floor is black.
Mm-hmm.
Like, holy crap. You know, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Obviously, there's something driving the oil to the surface, you know? So we figured out a solution. We milled down the concrete enough where the manufacturer felt comfortable, rebuilt the floor, and then put the flooring system down.
Yeah.
Those things are important. And the reactivity of your manufacturer to be able to support you is the most important thing. Because if we're calling someone, and I'm sure, again, your listeners can relate, if we're calling you, it's not because I'm asking you how to apply the material. I'm calling you because there's a problem and I need an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that relationship we have, you know, with Duraflex, we have a few other manufacturers, but we have a great relationship with them where if we call you, there's a problem and they answer.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing for us. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Another part of the coating selection that was intriguing, at least to me, you guys sort of had some interesting substitutions. I know, for example, the urethane cement you chose because of the quicker recoat windows, and it's fairly forgiving of cooler temperatures, which working in Massachusetts, that's obviously a concern. And I think on this job, you had the polyaspartic top coat because obviously it's pretty suitable for food and beverage environments. But I think rather than two layers of the polyaspartic, for cost reasons, the one underneath it was an epoxy grout coat, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So talk, if you could, about sort of working with the client and having the flexibility to sort of adapt the system a little bit for, I don't know, the needs of a particular project, like in this case, the urethane cement, because it works well with cooler temperatures, the epoxy grout coat, because it's a little more cost efficient, and of course, you still get the benefit of the polyaspartic as the top coat. What was that like in terms of the specific coating selection for this job?
Yeah, so again, a lot of it went back to when, you know, we used a term internally, we call it value engineering.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that value engineering took place around deadlines and also, you know, workability of the schedule. So you know, we would have loved to have done two polyaspartic top coats, but, you know, that wasn't in their budget, right? So we always break things down because our industry is arbitrary to most people. People are like, oh, epoxy, you just paint floors. And I'm like, no, we don't paint floors. You know, we install flooring systems, right?
Right.
It's a dirty word in our world. But the reason it's important to differentiate not only is because not everyone can do what we can do, right? It also helps them understand that we're not just applying a basic paint, right? We have step one, prepping the floor. Step two, patching the floor. Step three, hanging the cove. Step four, applying our base coat. Step five, applying our grout coat. Step six, applying our top coat, right?
Right.
And when you start to educate the client and they start speaking your language in those terms, it makes it really easy to explain it to them rather than saying, oh, we're going to put a urethane cement down, epoxy to polyaspartic, right? You can say, look, these are our steps and this is where we can save time. Right.
Okay.
This is a critical piece of it. And this is how we would facilitate the project. Right. Mm-hmm. Depending on what we're doing, you know, how much area, right, for steps one through three, we can leapfrog ahead and start working on steps one through three while steps four, five, and six are curing.
Great
right?
point.
So it allows us to kind of keep moving forward. And that's how we approach it.
So in closing, I know that we profiled, I believe, the first phase of the job, but then there were a couple of phases after that, correct? What did this all lead to once you got the first done?
So they ended up, you know, the first one, I think it was like 50,000, and then they did another 50, and there's another 20. It led to more collaboration. Instead of retrofitting a warehouse for the next phase, they actually installed pre-built pods, which was interesting because the pre-built pods were massive, right? These massive rooms with steel floors. Well, with that, we had to come up and say, well, you want to do the same system, but, you know, we can't just go pouring urethane cement on a steel floor that has a coating. Like, we need to do adhesion tests and pull tests. We need to make sure that when we put the urethane cement on top of it, we're not going to pull the basic coating off and you're going to get back to bare steel. So, you know, the client trusted us. We did that testing and we worked. You know, you go back to that relationship with the manufacturer,
sure,
found a solution to be able to do the same system and provide them the same product. Because the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to have building one has this system, building two has this system, because it requires the operator to have completely different SOPs, right? Standard of protocol to clean the space, to repair the space, to back to service. Like, you don't want to do that. You want to make it as easy to use for the end user as possible.
Yeah.
So that's what it led to. And it also led to more work in the space. You know, again, it's a small space. Cultivators move around just like, you know, facility managers move around, right? They jump around and they know who you are and what you do and how you approach things. And, you know, it leads to more work ultimately.
Yep. And I assume the feedback was pretty positive after not just the first phase. We talked about that in the article, which you can find in the July 2020 issue of Coatings Pro Magazine. By the way, that has all sorts of background details on the project as far as the coating thicknesses, the equipment used. Again, just check out that July 2020 issue for more specifics than what we've discussed on the podcast. But I'm guessing because you progressed to these other stages that the feedback was pretty positive, right?
Yeah. I mean, it still is a great relationship with the client. You know, we feel very fortunate and blessed to be a part of that project and to have been able to work on it. And you know, it was a really good project team, you know, all around, from the owner to the architect to the GC to all the other subs. It was a really fun thing to be a part of. And, you know, you see some crazy stuff.
You know? No doubt. Folks, he is Justin Tuzinya. He is the president of Black Bear Coatings and Concrete. Justin, before we sign off, any way that people can either get in touch with you or Black Bear to find out more information if they're interested in learning more about what you guys offer?
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the best ways is always our website, blackbearconcrete.com. You know, I always love to be accessible to people. You can email me. My email is J like Justin, D like David, T like Tango, at blackbearconcrete.com. More than happy to answer any questions or if someone has a similar project they want to pick my brain about, you know, don't hesitate to reach out.
I'm sure our listeners will greatly appreciate that. Folks, for Justin, I am Ben Dubose. This is where we'll wrap it today. If you want more information, Justin mentioned the Black Bear website. You can also go to Coatings Pro Magazine at coatingspromag.com. We've got all sorts of daily updates and, of course, our monthly issues in which we profile in these bi-monthly issues what's going on out in the field, projects like the one that Black Bear just completed at the Commonwealth Alternative Care Facility. You can find those in our issues, which of course there's print issues, but also we've got those at the website, codingspromag.com, and also NACE International. You can find that at nace.org. For Justin, I'm Ben. Thanks for listening, and please come back soon for another podcast right here at NACE International.